Hello and welcome to this, the latest podcast in an ongoing series from the Institute of Leadership and Management. This week we will be discussing leadership issues which have made the newsstands during the week to the 23rd of March 2019. My name's Nick Scott, I'm an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management, and, as ever, I'm joined today by the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Nick.
Our first story this week reflects on the widespread reporting of the university and college admissions scandal in the United States, where it was revealed that if you have enough money and status, you can guarantee your child's entry and advancement either by paying someone to give them a better score or get someone more able to take the admissions test, pretending to be them. The Guardian newspaper reports this as an outright crime. Those in a privileged position paying bribes and faking scores. So, Kate, can underrepresented groups ever get a fair shake? What is the leadership challenge in trying to deliver a level playing field with equitable outcomes?
Well, I think, firstly, this is definitely a crime. Universities and other awarding bodies throughout the world grapple with this problem of plagiarism in the running of their own assessments. To add another problem to that in terms of fraudulent admissions makes the creation or the achievement of a level playing field even more elusive. At the Global Drucker Conference in Vienna last November, Financial Times journalist Adrian Wooldridge spoke very angrily about what he identified as both US and UK political elites who use what is supposed to be, after all, a period of service. Elected politicians are supposed to serve the countries, the constituencies that elect them. But they use that in order to safeguard the future of their children, to enable them to get access to the Ivy League universities, to the best internships. No, the list continues. When we're looking at including more underrepresented groups in organisations, and notions of quotas, for example, are mentioned, they're met with outrage. But actually, at what point is there a level playing field? I think my argument here, it certainly is too late by 18 or 21, 25 or 35. It's actually from conception. Your access to social capital, cultural capital, all the other things that one needs to ensure that one progresses are more freely available to some than others. And if they are using that privilege to almost put privilege upon privilege, it makes it more excluding for those underrepresented groups. So I think we're correct to be outraged by this. These are crimes. And it shines a light on how difficult it is to progress when you don't come from the sort of background that supports that very progression.
Our second story asks if recruitment can look forward to a future devoid of unconscious bias by the use of artificial intelligence and robotics. The BBC reports that Swedish recruiters TNG are now road testing a 40 centimetre tall robot interviewer called Tengai. The robot sticks to a predefined template of questions for all candidates, and thus avoids the conversational banter which it is said leads to unconscious bias. TNG claim this approach will create a more sustainable labour market, will increase workforce diversity, and assist in finding the best candidates. Well, Kate, are they right? Should we be aiming to remove humans from the interviewing process?
Well, certainly anything that's intended to address the problem of unconscious bias and go some way to removing it is to be welcomed. But of course, a robot doesn't start as a blank canvas. The very intelligence that it needs in order to learn and to become more intelligent is actually based on human input. And where you input, for example, historical data, where reason that people have been selected for jobs, and then you match that with their backgrounds, the recruitment decisions will be fundamentally flawed because they will be full of bias. So the process that goes into setting the robots off I think, needs a huge amount of attention. But in all the conversations I've had with so many managers over the years, I don't think I've ever met one that says that he or she is not good at interviewing. It's the sort of thing people like to do and pride themselves on their ability to do it well, to be able to judge from somebody's performance at an interview whether they're going to be a good fit or not. When we conducted our research in 2016 on the first 3 months in a job and how important they are, one of the things that it revealed was how important that first connection is, that relationship that you build with your line manager, and how important that relationship is to whether you're going to enjoy staying in the job or indeed want to stay in the job. You will not get that same connection with a robot. But when you have been offered a job and the person who offered you a job was on the interview panel, that feeling of being chosen and somebody wanting you on their team is a very powerful one.
A recent piece in the British Medical Journal highlighted tensions around the unrewarded extra mile that some managers have come to rely on. Consultant David Oliver took issue with NHS England chair David Prior, who criticised the lack of commitment and discretionary effort of those staff who wouldn't stay at work and help out beyond their contracted hours. Is it reasonable to expect staff to go above and beyond?
Well, that is the very definition of engagement, and the number of engagement initiatives that we see and engagement surveys that are carried out. But once something becomes normal, then it's the new normal. And then you're asking people to go over and above the new normal. At what point does the well-being of the employee get sacrificed in the pursuit of going the extra mile?
Business analytics firm Gartner's latest global talent monitor reveals that this trend has increased in 5 of the 6 last quarters. Gartner VP Brian Kropp says firms have inadequate employee value propositions, which don't reflect employees' issues such as career development, work-life balance, and competitive wage and benefits packages. Do you think he's making a fair point here?
Values are very important, and recent research we've yet to publish that we undertook in January identified being valued as being something that's very important. Reasons for people to stay in a job and not being valued, often a prompt to leave. You can convey how you value somebody in many different ways. Of course, we all go to pay as being a big indicator, but there are many other sorts of benefits that can transmit the message, we care about you. But when we're expecting people to put in discretionary effort for us, that has to be a reciprocal arrangement. And the employer has also to put in discretionary effort into that relationship. But that discretion actually means being able to use judgment, being able to respond to the needs of the individual when it happens. And if you try and remove discretion from reward systems or a line manager's ability to be able to manage the staff that he or she has, then how can you ask employees to give something discretionary back?
And finally, Kate, can you give us an update on Institute events in the recent past?
Well, we had a busy week last week. We were in Leeds, where we were looking again, but from different perspectives of the future of leadership and the organisations and how new technology is going to impact jobs in different ways. We were also at the University of South Wales Coaching Conference, where we ran a masterclass on the importance of valuing your employees, and heard from Julie Starr and Catherine Sandler, both really inspirational and insightful coaches.
Well, sadly, that's all we have time for this week. We'll be back next week with more leadership-related news stories, but in the meanwhile, please visit the website www.institutelm.com to find out more about the Institute of Leadership and Management. You can download various resources from there, including an evaluation of your own leadership profile, developmental worksheets, and various webinars covering the key dimensions of leadership. Naturally, you can find these podcasts there, or subscribe via iTunes or Spotify.